Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com, electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat, and Precision Fuel 30 gels and drink mixers to give you enough carbohydrate to perform at your best. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. We're also brought to you by athleticgreens.com/OxygenAddict. Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily is an all-in-one daily supplement with 75 vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and digestive enzymes. They're all whole food sourced ingredients, and listeners get a free year supply of liquid vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Just visit athleticgreens.com/OxygenAddict. Links are in the show notes. All right, team, how you doing? I hope you're good. Hope you had a great weekend. Just today, the sun has been shining. It's been baking hot. It's a great end to the summer here in the UK. I hope you're out having a great time swimming and biking and running. I had a cracking interview today for you with someone who knows a lot about running in the heat of the British summer. I've got Tom Crossland back on with the complete story of having completed his Run to Refuge 1,900-mile, 90-day run around England and Wales. You know, long-time listeners to the show will know I've had Tom on a few times and been giving updates on him along the way. I've been coaching Tom for 5 years. He's a fantastic person, and he's completed something absolutely mind-boggling. So if you've got any doubts about your ability to do or complete anything, then listening to Tom and the challenges he's faced and overcome will really inspire you today, I hope. Right, before we kick into that, though, we've got some news from the triathlon world. There's been some amazing racing happening this weekend. We had Roth, we had Ironman Switzerland, we had Super League Tri. We're going to start off with Roth, or Rote, Challenge Rote, as the official title goes. There have been some changes made to the bike course this year. Everybody knew this. The organizers took out the Solberg Hill to stop people congregating there and, you know, try and reduce the crowd numbers. So the course was shorter than usual. The course was reported to be, was meant to be 170K. I think it might have been a bit shorter than that. Regardless, the times that happened that day on this course, I think it's one of the fastest, most amazing days of racing that ever happened. We're going to start off by talking about the women's race, because Anne Haug has put down what I think is the most extraordinary performance possibly. I mean, I feel really bad for her that she was robbed of a chance to have a crack at Chrissy Wellington's world record, because there's no question that on this day she was, I'm not saying she would have broken it, but she was in shape to do, or, you know, she did produce one of the most extraordinary performances of all time at Iron Distance Triathlon. And the fact that the race wasn't full distance because of the course change, I think is really tragic for her. She crossed the line, and get your head around this now, albeit with a short bike course, but she crossed the line in 7 hours, 53 minutes, and 48 seconds. Now, analysis that I've seen done on different websites reckon that the course was 15k short to what it should have been to usual. So it, you know, maybe it wasn't 170k, maybe it was closer to 160, but even adding 20 minutes onto her bike time, which I think is about right, looking at the men's times, Patrick Langer did a 350 on the bike. You've got to think he'd be about 410 on the Roth course. Anne Haug adding 20 minutes on the time, that would put her in the sort of 8 hours 14 time compared to Chrissy Wellington's 8:17. She'd have been in the ballpark for sure. She closed with what was the fastest run that's ever been seen at Roth. She was faster than Chrissy Wellington's run. Now, it won't be recognised in the official records as such because obviously the bike was short, and that's going to have a knock-on effect as well. But what an incredible performance from her, especially a week on from the Collins Cup. Now, you know, you can sit there and you can say she was obviously saving something under a saddle when she raced the Collins Cup, and fair enough, with a big race like Roth on the horizon, I think that's absolutely fair. And she's produced an astonishing performance. I've seen some tweets from her coach, Dan Larang, saying that she was texting him in the week saying that she didn't think she was in great shape and she didn't think she was going to go very well. So that just goes to show that the race that we feel we're going to have might not be the race that we're going to have. So those of you who are headed out to race this weekend, you're going to Bowood, then you may be thinking, oh, I'm not thinking that, I'm in great shape at the moment. You just never know what your body is going to have on the day. So what a storming performance from her, 7:53.48. Her splits were a 52-minute swim, 4:14 on the bike, and 2:43.54 on the run. Great race from Laura Siddle in second place. She charged through in the final few kilometers. Really great to see her there. I think she's had a couple of second places there now. So great to see her back racing strong again. She was 8:25. Fenella Langridge as well, hold on for third place there. Another great race for her. That was her second iron distance race, I think. So great to see that. She was an 8:27. She faded a little bit on the back 5K of the marathon to get caught by Laura, but a really great performance from her again. Really, really good stuff. Over on the men's race, it was the blue train on the front during the bike ride. There was a lot of Erdinger athletes pacing each other, let's say. Reports have varied as to how close they were riding, let's put it that way. I'm not casting aspersions here, but the bits of the video clips I looked at, I was thinking, okay, we'll see how this goes. Regardless, I mean, Roth is known for being a fast course. Langer swam 47:28, so cracking swim from him. He's in really good swim shape, and it shows that, you know, getting out with the front pack at Kona last time was not a fluke. 3:50 on the bike, so maybe that equates to a 4:10. And then he ran 2:38.30, so legit. Another superb run from him. And again, he's answered some critics there. People were slagging him off after his race at the Collins Cup. He was obviously saving something under his saddle for this race, and, you know, absolutely goes down. It is the biggest race in Germany. It's one of the biggest races in the world. Maybe the Collins Cup doesn't have yet the cachet that people want it to. You can't fault him. He's absolutely smashed that run. But the run of the day goes to a chap whose name I can barely even pronounce, Felix Henschel from Germany. He closed with a 2:35.40 marathon. So again, it's not going to be recognised as such because of the shorter bike, but that's a faster run than Luke Van Leerde's run course record, which is amazing. So he was there in third. He was 7:31. Nils Fromhold was 7 hours 30. And Patrick Langer was 7 hours 19. And again, you can make the case here. You had 20 minutes onto that bike time. He's coming in at 7:39. He's only a handful of minutes away from Frodeno's 7:35 on that course. And by all accounts, Langer was easing up over the last couple of miles of the run as well. So maybe he had even more to give. Shout out there to Tom Davis as well in ninth. Solid race from him. He did 7:55, closing with a 2:56. So a very solid day out for him. I hope he's happy with that. Other news over at Ironman Switzerland. Again, someone who, well, it was rumoured that she was ill on the day at the Collins Cup. Whether she was ill or whether she was saving herself for this race at Zurich, who knows? But she certainly bounced back. Daniela Ryf has come back on a legit distance course. The swim times here are ridiculous. Daniela swam 39:44, which, you know, to give her due, was as fast as the second or the main pack of men swam. They swam 38 flat. So she's had a good swim, but that swim has got to be short, surely. Unless there's something about it I don't know, and it's in a current assisted river, that would equate to, I'm going to say it's probably 12 minutes quick, something like that for the men, 13 for the women. So you've got to be looking at the thick end of 800 meters plus short. That never happens when I'm racing an Ironman. It always goes the other way. Regardless, she swam 39:44, biked 4:43, ran a controlled 3:05 for an 8:32. So again, a very, very quick official Ironman time there from her. So she's obviously in good form, and it'll be interesting to see how she goes at the Ironman World Champs in 2 weeks' time. Petra Eggenschweiler from Switzerland was second, and Christian Leopold was third. Over on the men's race, we had an absolutely storming race here, really going at each other with Jan van Berkel and Joe Skipper. I've got some comments from him. Jan took the win in the end. swam a 38, 420 on the bike, and closed with a 237.41 run. Joe Skipper was a couple of minutes back in 7.41. He closed with a 239 run, and Rudy Wild took third in 7.49. Joe's comments on Twitter afterwards essentially said he thinks that Jan's run was one of the best, if not the best, of all time on a marathon that had some trail sections, some twisty sections. He said, I had the best run of my life and I couldn't get anywhere near him. So it's great to see that respect between the competitors after the race. But great to see those guys racing so well. And, you know, hats off to Joe. 6.5 days after racing the Collins Cup to come out and smash an Ironman and run 2:39 off the bike. That's absolutely amazing. So really good stuff. Both Jan and Joe will have qualified for their Kona slots with that race. So they're in for Kona in February, should it happen. And then other racing we had going on, we had Super League Tri, the first round of that happen over in London. Some good racing went on. I really enjoyed watching the highlights of this. And they've vastly cut this race series down this year, as a lot of you will know from the last time it happened. There was a whole weekend's worth of racing with heats. I think they've recognised the need to kind of be less stressful on the athletes' bodies. They cut it down so it was an hour and a half's worth of racing for both the men and the women. So it's much more sustainable for them to race weekends back to back for the 4 weekends of racing. It's London this weekend, then Munich, then Jersey, then they fly over to America to do the race at Malibu for the end of the series there. And I think it's great. It's got the feel to me of the end of season post Tour de France criteriums. You know, there's some serious head to head racing going on, but there's a real showmanship aspect to it as well. And a lot of my team athletes who went down to watch it said they just loved it. It's great to be up and close, being able to get autographs. You can get right up against the barriers and watch the athletes come by right in the finishing chute. And loads of our guys had, you know, selfies with Hayden Wilde coming by, or Johnny Brownlee coming by, or Katie Zafiris, or Jess Lermuth, or George Taylor Brown zooming by in the background. So really amazing opportunity. So if you got down, I really hope that you got to enjoy it. On the women's side, Jess Lermuth took the win from Georgia Taylor Brown and Vicky Holland. So a GB123. GTB had a bit of a nasty crash and came off the bike and looked like she scraped herself up pretty good, God bless her, pulling her feet out of the pedals, coming into transition. So it's good to see she managed to get herself finished there. Over on the men's side, we had Hayden Wild pull out a storming last run. He had a bit of a short shoot advantage to pull off the win over Vincent Lewis and Johnny Brownlee, with goal Vasco Valacha in fourth place there as well. Alex Yee in fifth, not quite able to do enough to pull himself up there. But some great racing, really exciting to watch. And if you've not seen it, the highlights are on the website. So highly encourage you to go over and watch that and give yourself a bit of that to watch when you're on the turbo. Also worth watching is the replay of the highlights of the Collins Cup. They've got it down to a 50-minute edited highlight show, and that's good to watch when you're on the turbo as well. I think it comes across better as a highlights reel than it came across in real life. There's some quite good cut between the footage of the different athletes there. Like I said last week, I'm in two minds as to whether I thought it made a great spectacle on day. In terms of, if you were not a triathlon fan watching this, would you be gripped by it? Is part of the challenge of it the venue? Was the course not great? Is the bike course a bit dull going up and down a motorway? I don't know. There was something about it that didn't. I was really up for it, and it didn't quite set me on fire, if I'm completely honest. People I know who've been there in person said they thought it was fantastic. So, you know, credit to them. They got the event done. They've proved that it happens. So that's good. It's proof of concept. Rumors are that it's going to move around to different venues in the future as well. So maybe that'll help. But yeah, good stuff. Some interesting stuff. They've awarded the MVP Most Valuable Player Award to, no surprises, Taylor Nebb from the female side. She absolutely smashed it, didn't she? She's really one to watch. I really hope she goes to the 70.3 World Champs, because she's on fire at the moment. On the men's side, no surprises, it was awarded to Jan Frodeno. All right, guys, before we go into the interview of the week, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors, Precision Hydration. get yourself some pH electrolytes. It's hot at the moment. You need to be taking care of your electrolytes so that you stay hydrated, because the amount of sodium that we all lose varies massively. Some people can lose 200 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat, all the way through to someone like me. I took their advanced sweat test and found I lose over 1500 milligrams per liter of sweat. You can take their online sweat test on the website. You can book an advanced sweat test with them in real life and find out your actual numbers. They're also aiming to do for fueling what they've done for hydration by helping you understand how much carbohydrate you need, as well as how much fluid and how much electrolyte. You can use their quick carb calculator on the website and get fueling recommendation for your body size and for the event that you're racing. And you can also book a one-to-one video consultation for free with their team to refine your hydration and fueling strategy. Excuse me. So check out their new Fuel 30 gels and Precision Fuel 30 drink mixes. Loads of our athletes have been using them and trialing them and are raving about them. They love the simplicity. 30 grams of carbs in each sachet. You know exactly how much you're taking. Head over to precisionhydration.com and use the code OxygenAddict15 to get 15% off your first order with the code OxygenAddict15. All right, guys, here we go. Over to this week's interview of the week with Tom Crossland on his run to refuge. Okay, Tom Crossland, welcome back onto the show. And let me start by saying congratulations, man. 1,900 miles. Say that again. 1,900 of your English miles. In new money, what's that, close to 3,000 kilometres?
Yeah, just about 3,000 kilometres.
Long way in an aeroplane. Extremely long three-day drive. Incredibly long bike ride, but even further, driven by carbohydrate and running shoes. Yeah. So I want to give you the chance to tell the story. Obviously, long-time listeners of the show are gonna know a bit of the background, of the history, the development. But you just finished, as we were recording, it was just a couple of weeks ago. So I've got to start by asking, how sore are your legs after completing something like this?
Not very sore at all.
No,
that's the really sickening answer. They're pretty fine. I've been out for a ride and a short run. Still quite fatigued, but pretty good.
It's not fair. Like I love asking the pro Ironman and Iron Women this, because I love hearing that they're shuffling down the stairs on their bums or crawling down backwards as well. So you have to at least give us that hope. Have you basically trained through fatigue? You get to the point where you can just run forever. Is that how it feels?
I think so. There's whenever I hit a hill, there's no power there, so I can't go faster, or there is a pace that I can go at the moment. And it is no faster than that. And when I went on the ride, as soon as we hit any hills, they started to tell me that they were still tired.
Love it. So let's go back to the beginning then. What originally inspired you to come up with this crazy scheme? Run to Refuge was originally not planned to be around the UK, was it?
No. So the original plan was to go from Athens in Greece back to London, which was roughly about 2,000 miles. And then COVID struck. That was meant to be last year.
Yeah, COVID had other ideas.
COVID struck and scuppered everyone's plans. And come October last year, I was quite keen to get the project underway. It had been in the planning for a good 2 years before last year. So by October, it'd been 2.5, almost 3 years in kind of around my mind. And I was just keen to get it done. But I didn't think running across 10 countries was going to be feasible even this year. And luckily I was pretty right.
So it proved, right?
Yeah. So I was looking around for a different route that was roughly the same distance and around the coast of England and Wales, roughly worked out about the same distance. And it seemed like a good project to take on. And logistically, it was a lot easier logistically. And the amount of runners that came and joined me was just wouldn't have been as easy running across Europe.
No, it would have been a much more organizational nightmare, wouldn't it? People trying to pop over to Europe and meet you somewhere. It was hard enough finding you in the middle of the English countryside. So you kicked off, pretty much started from your home west of London, scooted across London, up the East Coast, across Hadrian's Wall.
Down the West Coast, round Wales, along the Bristol Channel a little way. I cut off Devon and Cornwall because the distance didn't work out and the timing didn't work out. So headed south from West and Supermare, roughly hit the south coast, headed along to Brighton, headed north back to London, then back home. So it was only the one lap around home.
The thing that blew my mind, I mean, obviously, we knew going into this, roughly 50 kilometers a day. That's a big distance. But just from a purely sort of from a coach's point of view, looking at your training peaks every day, and I would call up the map every day and be like, I can't believe it was about 4 days in, and I was like, oh, he's over there. You know, you'd run from home and you were in the other side of Essex or something by this point. And then a week and you were up near Norwich. It was mind blowing how quickly you moved around the country.
Yeah, and that was always the kind of, that was mind-blowing for me as well, trying to work out kind of weather, trying to figure out how can we plan for the weather. Well, in 3 days, I'm going to be 150K elsewhere. So
yeah,
there's no point in looking at weather for here. It was quite a relentless pace and relentless progress.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing about this is you'd set yourself, I don't want to say a rigid structure, but on your website, you had I'm going to run from here to here on this day and here to here on this day. There wasn't really any room for error, injury, illness. That was the thing that was stressing me out through all. It was like, it's unheard of for somebody to go 90 days as an athlete, not get a niggle or some kind of cold or something. And it was remarkable that you managed to do that as well as you did. There were a couple of little blips along the way, weren't there? But for the vast majority of it.
And there were lots of niggles, but I think the schedule helped. I reflected a lot on that schedule because there are places that I wish I could linger longer, like spent a few days. But then I think the temptation early on when it was pretty brutal, when my body was complaining a lot and there was swollen knees and really, really quite sore hips, it would have been easy to go, I'll only do half the distance, say I'll catch up next week or something. And I think it'd be really tempting to get to do that and then get really far behind very quickly. And then never catch up, because the reality is you really, you know, 50K for me was quite a long way, and then thinking about having to catch up 10K or something would just have been, I think, too much.
What was the state of your body then at the end of the first day, the end of the first week? How did it feel getting into it in that first week?
The first day was a bit of a journey of exploration. It was the first day of the June heat wave.
Yeah.
So it suddenly got very, very hot after training through spring, which was cold and miserable. And so the first day took a lot longer. I felt all right. I was ready for that level of fatigue. I trained a lot. And that first day was kind of like a long training run. But it took a lot longer than planned. I was on my feet a lot longer than I expected. And then by the end of the first week, I was pretty... Well, I was very broken. My knee, my right knee was swollen. My left hip was really quite sore. The first rest day, there was quite a lot of introspection about what I'd taken on.
Mm.
But what was amazing for me was how quickly my body recovered from those things. So I came off that Sunday, the first Sunday after the first week, and feeling quite worried about the whole project. By the time I started after the first rest day, I was pretty okay again.
It's interesting how a lot can change in a day or two, isn't it?
It was still pretty sore, but I was able to run, able to move quite well. And then that was kind of the pattern that happened. If things flared up within a few days, they would quiet down again.
And was it just a case of telling yourself, we're just going to keep moving and things will be okay?
Yeah. It was having that mindset of, there's very little I can do. I've set myself this goal. I better just get on with it.
You know, you remind me of that story of the peaceful warrior. You're like an SAS mindset in a pacifist body, almost. It's this kind of relentless, this seems impossible, but we're just going to get it done anyway. Did you have any doubts during that first week?
I don't remember having any doubts.
Interesting.
I just was committed to keeping going, and the commitment to the project was such that just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And as long as I was able to walk, I knew I could get it done. It would take a very long time, but I knew I could get it done.
Okay. Because my experience of the sort of the really long distance stuff is, when I get sore, my experience has been I just get sorer to the point I can't move anymore. And that's the part of your mindset that really intrigues me, is that I know I would be in a pain spiral really quickly, and within a day I'd be done. I've only done one ultra and I was done halfway through it. So I'm interested that you somehow managed to sort of reframe that internal conversation of, well, this pain's going to keep getting worse, into just, well, we're just going to keep going regardless.
I think it was helpful that I read quite a few accounts and spoken to a few people who've done this kind of long stuff, that they said that the first 2 weeks are effing miserable.
Right.
And then things sort of kind of settle down a bit. So I had that during that early stage, I had that in my mind that,
yeah,
I just need to survive the first 2 weeks. And it kind of worked out. I'm not sure what would have happened if those niggles or those injuries had got worse after 2 weeks. I think then I might have spiraled down. But having that very clear, almost goal, get through the first 2 weeks and then things will slowly get better.
Yeah, and so it proved.
Yeah, and so it proved.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that really helped with the mindset, because even when after that first week and being pretty sore, I was able to think, right, I knew the first week would be brutal. This was expected.
Yeah.
Next week will also be hard, but then it should get easier.
Then it's all gravy from that point onwards. So I'm going to put you on the spot with a few things then. Best three memories from the 90 days, or three great memories from the 90 days.
The first really great memory was on that last Sunday. The first week I ran most of it alone, because I train alone. I do everything. I go to races on my own. I'd kind of assumed I could do this on my own. Coming through Colchester, and unknown to me, my team behind the scenes had put a shout out for anyone to help out, and seeing somebody, just a running person from Colchester, coming up and saying, "Hi, you, Tom. We've just read your story. We want to help you get to the end." Was just overwhelmingly amazing, and so. That was a real, that will always stick in my memory as a really positive and great thing. And then the running community coming out for the whole run from that point on was just amazing how much time people took out of their lives to come and usually ran a lot slower than they were, than they usually ran, and just spending 8 hours out with me, or 9 hours if that was what it was going to take, just to help me get through it. And so I can't say thank you enough to the running community. And it really refreshed my faith in humanity.
Yeah.
Came out and gave up their time. And then
plus they get to run with a legend as well. There is that, you know. Now, Vicky and I said when we saw you in Whitby, we were trying to get our heads around. There was a guy and a girl running with you, and we chatted with them briefly at that first aid station, and we're like, oh, so you're from around here? And one was like, no, I'm from London, and the other one was from like, I don't know where. Like, what are you doing here? Oh, I got the train up and I've left my car here and I'm gonna fly back later. And it's like, this is amazing. People have treated it like a, you know, like a chance to go and do something completely different in a different part of the country. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was really, really amazing. And as I say, I train alone, so I hadn't necessarily expected that or thought I needed it. But West Wales, where the scenery was amazing, but it's pretty empty of people. I had 10 days, I think, where there was any runners, and I could feel by the end of that it was getting harder work.
You were starting to go a bit Colonel Kurtz at that point, were you?
Yeah. I mean, it was just about grinding out the days and just getting it done. It became, I think, very, very quickly it became work or a job. So I woke up, I just got on with it. I'm sure people listening don't always want to go to work, but you just do. It's just part of what happens, isn't it? You wake up, you get out of bed, you have your breakfast, and you go to work. with that mindset, it made each day just part of what happened. There was never a question of whether or not I would start. It was just, we get up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the third most amazing memory was there were four, I think it was four separate people that ran their first ultras with me.
And that, nice.
And the ability to support somebody to do that through me doing my own little projects and them coming along, and just to enable them to have that experience is also pretty awesome.
Oh, that's so cool. So you were in the pretty rare position that you've seen pretty much all of the countryside around the coast of Great Britain, apart from Devon and Cornwall. So we have to push you later on that. You've got to go back and do that bit, because that's meant to be awesome as well.
And Scotland.
And Scotland, yes, there's that too, of course, yeah. Did I say UK? I'm terrible for this.
Yeah, England and Wales.
England, Wales, don't get confused. I remember years ago making the faux pas of Ireland being in the UK and just getting harangued later. I just misspoke, that's all. Leave me alone. Most amazing place that you saw that you hadn't been to before?
Northwest Wales, the peninsula in the northwest of Wales,
the Clyn Peninsula,
yes, and to be honest, the whole of the West Welsh coast, all the way from there, all the way down to Cardigan into Pembrokeshire.
Yeah,
that is just stunning.
Especially if you get the weather for it. I mean, you were pretty, well, I'm not going to say lucky because there was a heat wave to get through, but in terms of the pure aesthetics of it, there were plenty of blue sky days, weren't there?
There were. So the whole of West Wales was during the heat wave, so it was very still seas, which meant you could see to the bottom in the bays and blue skies the whole time.
Amazing.
So I think I was lucky with the weather. Heat I can cope with better than wind and rain and cold.
Yeah. So you really did look out, because it could have been beastly northerlies for 5 days in a row, couldn't it, with driving rain, like the Whitby day.
Yeah, it could have been a very, very different experience if that had been the case. Very different project if it had just been raining the whole time and cold.
What was your most epic day in all the project? I was going to say hardest originally, but I've rephrased it to most epic. When you got to the end of the day, can you pinpoint a time where you thought that was just beyond?
There were a few. So the West Welsh coast was pretty brutal. But in terms of single most epic, brutal day, I've got to get the right cut. The Jurassic coastline around Lulworth.
Yeah.
It was just, I knew it would be up and down. I knew it would be hilly. But it was, I think it was the most vertical gain I had through the whole thing in a single day. It was just relentless.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, compared to West Wales, where every day was over 1,300 metres of gain for like 2 weeks, that was just an isolated day. So it was a lot easier to just push on through.
I'll tell you that the day that brought it home to me, what you were doing the most, and I don't know why it took me till this point to kind of, it was a shock and awe moment. We'd driven on holiday from Manchester down to Cornwall, and we'd bought one of those old AA maps on the way, and we were kind of playing a game with the kids and like look at the map and work out where we are. And there's a section where you kind of go down the motorway from Bristol down to Exeter, and you kind of go from one bit of sea to the other coast almost, and then go over towards Cornwall. And on your training peaks on that day when you did that, I looked at it and my mind literally boggled. I was like, he's run from the north coast of Devon to the south coast, well, to the, I don't know where it would be, where you ended up, in a day almost. It was, I mean, it wasn't quite that, but I was like, oh my God, that was miles in the car. That was the kids moaning for hours and hours as we did that. How has he run that in a day?
Yeah, it was that, yeah. There were days like that for me as well. It was more the weeks, kind of at the end of a week thinking, where was I a week ago?
Yeah.
And never really, kind of, it was just continuous movement. And so people would say, oh, where are you going to be on this date? I don't know. I'm thinking about tomorrow. That's as far ahead as I think. I probably can't tell you where I finish tomorrow. I can just tell you where I start.
Was it a weird thing, sort of waking up in one place, going to bed somewhere else, going to bed somewhere else the next day, constantly kind of trying to keep track of where you were? Did you lose your sense of place almost?
It was very much, driven by a spreadsheet, and that was the track of it. And it would just be day by day, looking at the plan for that day, where we finish, right, on to tomorrow. I think very quickly I settled into that rhythm. I think it was more strange for the crew members who are coming and joining for a week or 2 weeks to suddenly be thrown into that with, okay, where are we tonight? Where are we tomorrow? Yeah. Where are we next week? I don't know, we're in a hotel somewhere. I need to check my spreadsheet, but I can't tell you off the top of my head.
Brilliant. And talk to us a little bit then about managing the cerebral palsy while you were running, because that's obviously, that was a big part of shaped who you were and your identity when you were a kid. Yeah. And I feel like it's, I don't know whether I'm right with this, but maybe this project has been part of shaking off that identity and forging a new one almost in your own head.
I think without knowing it, because we choose the path we choose because of our history and our experiences. So without consciously knowing it, I think a lot of doing this quite ridiculous project was driven from a place of I no longer need to see myself as that person that wasn't athletic or wasn't sporty at school or was bullied, or I am in my own head worthy of something. And it's hard, yeah. It's hard to put into words still exactly what.
Yeah.
That, so that's why I'm stumbling a bit. It's hard to put into words exactly what that was about. But I think a lot of this project, because I had a lot of time to think. People kept asking me, "Why are you doing it?" And it's really easy to say because I want to raise money for a charity. But there are lots of other ways to raise money for a charity that don't involve running for 3 months.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of time to reflect on why this.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was to throw off that self-image.
I think a lot of people who are into, you know, ultra endurance sport, triathlon, running, whatever, go through a similar thing, especially if they're sort of adult onset athletes. They weren't or didn't think of themselves as particularly athletic as kids. And then as adults, realize they've kind of defined themselves in their own head. And actually, that was just a story they told themselves. It's not true. Right. You know, you've told yourself you're not athletic, and it turns out you've done the most unbelievable feat of athleticism that I know of. Right. And who knows, it would only have taken a few different decisions further back down the decision tree for you to not to discover. And that's what I love about the age group stories, as it were, as opposed to the, you know, the elite stories tend to be, well, as a kid, I swam 20 hours a week and I always knew I was sporty and da-da-da-da-da. There's something in this kind of discovering, you know, we chipped away the layers of the onion and found something else underneath there that we didn't know was there.
Yeah, definitely. I agree completely. And I think that it's important for us all to focus on what we can do rather than what we can't. And it's very easy to get tied up into what we feel we can't do.
Yeah.
Focus on what we can and not. I'm really keen for people not to diminish what they're doing by any stretch just because I've done something that I fancied, whatever their passion is, whatever their goal is, that should be celebrated equally as much as this. And if their goal is to, I'm saying run a 5K because that's kind of what a lot of people want to do. But even if it's being able to walk to the end of their street and back without stopping, then we should celebrate that level of achievement as much as people are celebrating this.
And it's yeah.
And so quite a few runners came with me and would say, oh, I've done this, but it's nothing like what you've done. And I'm kind of like, well, that sounds epic. Well done. That's awesome. Let's celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. There's nothing worse than the conversation triathlon world where it's like, hey, you did an Ironman, well done. What time did you do? Or, yeah, but I didn't go as fast as one. It's like, not the point. You know, you've done this amazing thing, and everyone who sets out to do something epic for them has had to make so many sequential decisions to get up day after day after day and do something that's a bit harder than another choice that's a bit easier. Yeah. And that's ultimately what you represent to me. It's like, 5-6 years of work since I've known you to get to the point where I quite like that, the fact that you can run forever essentially if you choose. Stops hurting after the fourth week, great, keep on going.
Yeah.
All right, really hard question time. Now before we do that, tell us about the charity. We did say we were going to mention, you know, wasn't just about the running, it was you chose to use it to raise some money as well.
Yeah, and awareness of a UK-based charity called the Tribe Freedom Foundation, who are working to end modern slavery and human trafficking through three different work streams. They work with policymakers to try and work out a way to end modern slavery. They provide long-term support to survivors of modern slavery in the UK through their projects, and they fund projects to raise awareness of modern slavery and human trafficking within the UK. And I just think it doesn't get enough airtime or enough media coverage, considering how pervasive and horrendous modern slavery is. It's in every town, village, and city around the country. It's not something that happens over there, it's happening here, to it could be happening to neighbours, people on the street. It's
give us some numbers, because I remember hearing you say this before, and give us some definitions about what on the real world modern slavery actually is.
So modern slavery is an umbrella term to describe lots of different labour exploitation, servitude, sexual exploitation, trafficking. There are many different ways. Forced marriage would come under it as well. There are estimated to be 40 million people in the world living under modern slavery in some form.
40 million?
40 million. That's more than any other point in history.
So things are getting worse rather than getting better.
Yeah. And people are often hidden in plain sight. So there are no longer the traditional signs of slavery that we might think about shackles and whips and chains. Now the shackles and whips are the fear and exploitation by people, and the manipulation of the people. In the UK, there are estimated to be, I think in 2017, I think it was, there are estimated to be 136,000 people living in modern slavery. And it's becoming more prevalent, I think. And there are many different ways people can be exploited, in domestic servitude, working in nail bars, working for car washes, working in agriculture, on fishing vessels, county lines traffic children around the country to deliver drugs, which is quite a big problem right now. Child sexual exploitation, that would be trafficking children around the world, around the country. And so it's going on everywhere under our noses, and it can be overwhelming. But I think if we're more aware of it and think about how we can help, by supporting charities, by reporting anything that we feel doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
I guess the worst case scenario is report something and somebody goes and checks it out and it's okay.
Yeah.
So there's very little risk in you. I don't think people should challenge it directly, because obviously gangs and people can be very, organized crime is quite violent. But if you're at a nail bar and don't feel quite right, there are ways to report it
to
the unseen helpline and the national referral mechanism.
Yeah, the thing that got me last time we spoke was you telling me about the number of car washes that were almost as an industry renowned for. Not say every car wash is like that at all, but
and there are many very, very good hand car washes owned by very respectable people who are just wanting to be entrepreneurial, and we can't get everybody. Same as nail bars, there are lots of nail bars which are brilliant.
Yeah,
but there are.
But it's that something feels uneasy to me about this. Yeah. How can there was a place nearby us that I remember after we talked, like, I drove by and thought, how can seven or eight guys be working there and be charging £4 for a car wash? It's there's something, if it doesn't feel quite right, there's something. If
the economics don't add up, then it's there's an app, Safe Car Wash, which you can download, and they ask you a few questions and then I will give you an indicator.
That's interesting. Safe Car Wash. Okay. Well done, man. As we speak, that the number is sitting at £21,000. Is that right? Is that what you're up to?
Just over 22,000, almost 22,500.
22,000. Right. Come on, listeners. There's a link in the show notes. Get over there. Get your wallet out. Wash your own car. Donate the money to the Drive Freedom Foundation instead. We should be able to wrestle up somewhere in the region of 4,000 to 8,000 listeners, depending on how many people are attracted by your beard on the header photo that I used to promote this show, Tom. So hopefully we'll be able to to rinse a few more £10 notes out of the audience to help a very, very noble cause and an incredible physical feat that you've pulled off. What's next? Closing question. Apart from eating plenty of unhealthy food and relaxing a little.
I have some ideas. I'm trying to keep them quite close.
This isn't the last we've heard of you, is it not?
I have some ideas of something to come next. I need some time at home, some time at work. But there are some ideas bubbling around. The overall experience was one of enjoyment. There were really, really miserable days. But overall, I think it was a worthwhile project. And it's something I can see myself doing something similar or something similar but different in the future.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
But it's a bit early days to be giving my colours to the mast and saying, yes, this is what I'm going to do.
It's usually the day after the Ironman that everybody enters the next one. You get a few hours of never again, and then actually go on, sign me up. So I thought we might get you on the bounce, and
I've got a pretty good idea. I think that we're formed on the last day, running the last day. But as I say, I need to spend some time at home.
Yeah, awesome.
Before launching into the brand new project.
All right, so the website is runtorefuge.com. I'll put a link in the show notes for that, and I'll put a link directly over to your donations page. I was gutted I couldn't make it to run the final few Ks with you, as the COVID dramas played out in my immediate family, unfortunately. But I've got to say, man, what a project. A lifetime in the making, 90 days of running around England and Wales, man. Well done. What an achievement.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
You got promise to come back on again in the future when the next crazy adventure gets ramped up.
Of course. through the next crazy adventure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Tom is an understated man, to say the very least, to be able to do what, just shy of 2,000 miles, 90 days, running an ultra marathon every day, 5 days out of every seven. So it's like 3 days on, a day off, 2 days on, a day off, repeatedly for 3 months is just amazing. I'm absolutely staggered. It's an honour to know the guy, an honour to have been able to help him out in a small way towards doing that. I just think it's amazing. So like I said, there's a link in the show notes that goes through to his fundraising page. It'd be awesome if, as a podcast community, you can spare a few quid and nudge Tom over the next £1,000 between us. I think that should be doable, and it would be a good way to recognize what I think is a fairly monumental achievement for anybody, let alone if you're dealing with your cerebral palsy and your left leg not doing what you tell it to. And, you know, just I'm in awe of the guy. It's amazing. Right. Well, I'm going to stop waffling on. It's been great. I've really enjoyed chatting with Tom today. I'm going to wrap today's show up. So here's some discount codes and deals for you. Precisionhydration.com. You can use the code OXYGENETIC15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. They sponsor Tom. So support the good guys who support the good guys, please. athleticgreens.com/OXYGENETIC. If you're all in one daily nutritional supplement, get a free year supply of liquid vitamin D and 5 free travel packs when you subscribe to them. And also over at teamoxygenaddict.com, we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. You can book a call with me to see if you'd be a good fit for the team in the show notes. So there's loads of links in the show notes for all of those sponsors and Tom's fundraising page. You don't have to remember them. So click through on whichever podcast thing you listen on and it'll be right there for you to click. Until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.